The Socceroos registered a couple of wins against the might of New Zealand last week, and plenty of players made impressions on us. We'll talk about the good and the bad from that, preview some A-League men teams, plus we'll bring out some premium quality sound effects before ending the episode with a segment that, look, if I'm allowed to say so, this segment, it's going to put Santo, Sam and Ed to shame. It looks like it's going to be a very, very, very exciting season for football. So we hope you can join us all the way through right here with Kick 360 on the Golden Generation. Oh, this is very exciting, isn't it? The intro music's got me pumped up. This is going to be full of golden moments, dare I say. My name's Harper Pesting, and of course, we've got a panel, the absolute A-team for episode one of the Golden Generation. First up, you can say what you want about the Portuguese Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo. We've got the only Ronaldo that we could ever dream of. They call him the Rundle Moore Ronaldo out there in Adelaide. Lucas, welcome to the show.
I'll cop that. It's great to be back for another season and for the first of Golden Generation. Thanks for having me, Albert.
Oh, thank you very, very much for coming on, mate. Also here, now, you might know this guy for lots of things. You might know him for being mates with all the Man United players. You might know him for making Graham Arnold storm out of a press conference. You might know him for being the coach of the South Melbourne District's under-13 footy team. But we know him for being the absolute superstar on any and every podcast that he ever appears on. Tom Williams, welcome to the Golden Generation, my friend.
Thank you, Harper. Thanks for that introduction. Very much looking forward to getting back into it. So looking forward to this podcast. We've got the crew here. It's going to be a big one.
Oh, it's going to be a massive, massive one, full of golden moments, as David Bashir says. And also here, he's tested our patience tonight, I must say. But look, we'll leave that to one side. And this guy, the main reason we got him on is because his name just rhymes with everything. It's perfect for making segments just for him. Pat Bruschetto, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I'm glad that I know my worth and my role in the team straight away, but it's great to be back. Obviously, it's my first pod in a little while, and it's great to be part of the Golden Generation.
Yeah, dusting off the cobwebs. Let's hope you, kick things off with a bang, though. I reckon we'll start with you, actually. The Socceroos, of course, had two games over the last week or so. Should we start with a 2-0 win over New Zealand, Eden Park? Pat, tell us, just first off, your general and broad thoughts on this friendly match.
Look, I think this one was certainly more positive than the game in Brisbane, which we'll touch on in a second. But I think it probably posed more questions or more problems with the teams than solutions, to be honest. I think especially the first half, there was just really a lack of functionality, especially in the midfield. Obviously, we had a completely different midfield from the game on Thursday, and a lot of players that would really want to stake a claim to be in the squad. But just that first half, it was really turgid, slow, lethargic football. Couldn't really get the combinations going. Obviously, the second half, a little bit of a change in shape and a little bit of a change in personnel helped a little bit. And Connor Metcalf, one of those midfielders, got a brilliant assist for Mitchell Duke, and Tom Williams very, very happy about that. And then obviously some key substitutions later up at the front of the park that I'm sure we'll talk about in a second probably salvaged the game, actually gave us some positive things to talk about. But, yeah, I mean, I think that midfield's a real worry for me. And something that I posed on Twitter during the game is that we had two different midfields play over these set of friendlies, and we could probably all agree that our midfield is relatively our strongest part of the pitch with probably our best players. But if both midfielders for long stretches of the game struggle to really function properly as a midfield, is that down to the personnel or is that down to the way that they're tactically set up? I'm not sure what Lucas and Tom think, but that's one thing that really stood out for me.
I think that Arnie's already set on his midfield. I thought McGree was excellent as well in the game on Sunday. But I think it's 100%, even if Rogic is back, which as long as he gets 5 minutes since joining West Brom up until the 20th of October. I'm sure he'll be in that squad, or at least in the extended squad. But I think Arnie said on it. I'd honestly think the other guys are just fighting to be in the squad. Like I say, Metcalf was great. McGree was great as well. But I think Irvine is an Arnie player through and through. Moy is undroppable, even when he hadn't played for Yonks. And now you got Hrustic as well, who probably wasn't great in that first game, but he's one of our best players. So I think the three of them, it almost doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree on that as well. I think especially given how – I think especially given how the Irvine, Hrustic and Moy trio played against Peru, thought they played pretty well as a trio in that game. I think a lot of people actually forget that. I think the sort of narrative that people are following now is that, well, for some reason people think that we didn't play well against Peru when we dominated the whole game, the whole wash up immediately after that game was how well we played on the park, and that it was essentially an anomaly to how the rest of the qualifying campaign had gone. And I think a lot of that was to do with that midfield three. And I don't think these friendly games against New Zealand necessarily changed that, particularly the first one, when if you take that game in isolation and not in a vacuum, you have to see it as a friendly game. Like the way that Graham Arnold teams are built to play, as much as it sounds like somewhat tangential and somewhat of an excuse, it's built on physicality. It's built on winning those 50-50 duels. And in friendly games, you simply don't get that same level of intensity. And I think that was very clear in the first game. In the second game, I still think across the both games, I don't see it with the fullbacks. Like, especially at left back, Nathaniel Atkinson was much better than Fran Karacic, I thought. Because I thought Karacic was pretty much appalling in the first game, to be honest. He's just not well suited to playing sort of in those midfield areas that you see him take up as an inverted fullback. So that's a big problem area for the squad, I think. I think probably the biggest problem, and it's been very clear since the start of World Cup qualifying and even since we've changed the actual role of these fullbacks, because everyone remembers at the start of qualifying when you had Ryan Grant playing every game and all we were doing was getting the ball out wide and crossing to nobody with Ryan Grant. I think one of the games he had like 9 crosses and completed like one of them or something. And that wasn't working. Now we're playing the fullbacks inside and that's still not working. And I think a lot of it is to do with the personnel being selected. Like, we've got the personnel there to play. It's just that for some reason Arnold's not selecting. You could play Jason Davidson at left back and Nathaniel Atkinson at right back, and that would make sense. But it's just bizarre that it's not happening that way.
Do you think, though, that it was great having the centenary games at both against New Zealand? I think it was a missed opportunity. I think one should have been against New Zealand. I think we should 100%, I'm not sure the FA might have, but we should have been trying to face a bigger nation, because now we're going into France and Denmark. Really, the Peru game was the only opportunity we've had, and Japan as well, when we were completely depleted, of playing a side that's better than us. We've been playing teams for years now where we're going to have the ball and we can't break teams down. We're not really going to have to do that, maybe until Tunisia at the World Cup. At the World Cup, we're going to be sitting back and France are going to be pelting us. And Denmark are going to be pelting us. So I think when having those fullbacks play narrow might work in those games, but we should have at least tried to, again, they may have tried to schedule and it couldn't work out, try to get a friendly against a bigger nation, because then we could have actually seen played in a way that we actually might play in Qatar.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that happen as well.
Pat. We haven't mentioned this guy at all. Garang Kuol, everyone knows about the potential fairy tale story that could unfold if he does head to the World Cup. But I want to ask you, he was the youngest debutant for the Socceroos since Harry Kuehl. He's just turned 18 a couple of weeks ago. Should we be expecting anything from Garang Kuol, like long term at this stage, or should we just be enjoying it for what it is right now? What should we do?
Look, I think everyone can see the talent that Kuol has. It's absolutely phenomenal. Even I think the non-A-League world saw the All-Stars game. He came on straight away. There was a dull friendly in the first half. He comes on the second half. And just he's just got this energy and enthusiasm. He's just completely fearless. He doesn't care if he's playing on, you know, his first ever international game before he's even started an A-League game. He doesn't care if he's versing some of the best defenders in Europe. It's just this lovely, wonderful fearlessness that you really like to see, and it's great to see a young player have this. But it's clear it's not just that. It's clear that he's got talent as well. I mean, he just because I did mention before the substitution, I actually feel like that they actually disrupted our flow and momentum a little bit. We started well the second half, then we changed the gap. We changed the personnel around, and we lost our rhythm, lost our flow. And then Quayle comes on straight away, has an impact, makes that brilliant run down the right wing, must mean 60 metres maybe. But, yeah, it's just this. He completely opens up the game. He runs straight at defenders. He makes them work so hard. I mean, I think we're going to get in our potential squads in a minute, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any Australian football fan or pundit that wouldn't want him on the plane, especially if it's a 26-man squad. We've literally got nothing to lose by having him there, even if he only comes off the bench for maybe 15, 20 minutes to change a game if we're behind or something. But there's nothing to lose by leaving it at home, even if he hasn't started an A-League game. Who cares? The kid's obviously got talent. The kid's going to go for it. Even if we're down 5-0 against France, you know that he's going to come on for 10 minutes. He's just going to absolutely run it straight at Benjamin Pavard or Lucas Hernandez, whoever the French would have. And I think that's just something we need to have. I think we need to embrace it.
You mentioned potential squads there. I think it is time that we get into who we have in our squads at the moment. There, of course, could well be injuries, probably will be injuries in the next couple of months. But we'll start from the very, very back. Keepers. I think I've got a feeling that you guys might all have the same three keepers. But Lucas, let's just ask you first.
Yeah, Matt Ryan, Mitch Langrack, Andrew Redmayne, all pick themselves, really. I know Arnie really likes Danny Vukovic, and he's now going to get some game time in the Mariners. But I think there's no way he's bringing up Langrack. It's insane to me that he brought Langrack out of retirement and didn't give him a minute in the New Zealand games. But, yeah, I think that three picks themselves, to be honest.
Yep.
Thumbs up from Tom. Pat, in agreement?
Yeah, it's complete agreement for me.
Yeah, cool. I think that's a pretty consensus view throughout the Australian football, the fans. But, Tom, we'll go to you now. Defence, what defenders have you got?
Yeah, this is actually a tough one for me. And I think when you're picking these, again, I don't want to go too tangential, but like when you're picking
loving
the
that
players
word,
for the squad. But when you're picking this squad, I think you have to consider why you're actually picking each of the players. So I think one of the things you have to say here is that for this World Cup, you're allowed 5 subs, right? So you want to pick players that are going to change the game off the bench. So I think it's tempting to take less defenders, which is sort of what I've done. So I've picked players that can play multiple positions to sort of cover that. So I've gone with left backs Joel King and Jason Davidson. It's also worth saying I'm not actually picking like who I think Arnie will pick. I'm just picking who I think should be in the squad. I've gone with Suter, Rolls, Alex Grant, and Trent Sainsbury, and then Degenek as backup for Suter if he goes down. And then I've also gone with Thomas Deng as a sort of centre-back slash right-back cover, so that way I can pick one less specialist right-back, and I've gone with Nathaniel Atkinson. I just don't think any other right-back's done enough to deserve a place in the squad, particularly Ryan Grant and Fran Karacic, who've consistently been poor whenever they've played.
How do you rate Thomas Deng as a right back, Tom? Because I think he divides opinion in that position.
Yeah, he wasn't very good at the Olympics against Egypt when he played there. But I think for the way that and I was anticipating this question, I think for the way that the team's set up, where he's playing inside a bit more, I think that suits him a lot more because he has the space on his right foot to just open up the field. Whereas at the Olympics, when he was playing as like an overlapping right back, he's just not someone that's going to do that because he's not a great crosser. He's not as good technically as, like, say, Nathaniel Atkinson, for example, but I think he'd be more than comfortable playing in that role.
Pat, how similar is your defence compared to Tom's?
Honestly, I think more or less man for man I'd be exactly the same, and I also completely agree with Tom's views on the fullback, especially at right back. I think Atkinson, I know he struggled. I think it was the UAE game he played. I remember he had a complete stinker. I know I I haven't been following the Scottish football as closely as some Aussie pundits, but I have seen on Twitter some that at times Atkinson has struggled maybe a little bit at Hearts. But I think if Atkinson can get a good run of form going, can kind of get a bit of confidence, he has to play there. I think for the reasons that Tom said before, he's probably the most dynamic right back that we have at the moment. He kind of can, you know, we've seen in the A-League, he can do the bombing forward, kind of, you know, your stereotypical overlapping fullback, but then he can also do that key role of tucking inside a little bit more. And I think, yeah, Tom made the point that our other fullbacks are out of form. I think if I see Ryan Grant anywhere near the Socceroos squad, I'll probably explode. So, no, I think I agree very much with Tom there on the defence, and I think like all of us, we just hope and pray that Suta will be fit. I know that it's going to be really pushing it for him. I think it was an ACL injury. They're not bloody easy to recover from, but we just hope that somehow by the grace of God, he's going to be on the plane to Qatar.
Lucas, have you got a differing opinion for the first time in this segment?
Mine's actually completely different, which is probably good for the podcast. I think I've gone a bit more closer to what Arnie will actually do, partly so I can say that
just clarifying mine, I don't think Arnie will go anything like mine. I don't think there's any chance that Grant gets picked. I don't think there's any chance that Davidson gets picked either. And I think Bajic and Karacic will both be there.
Yeah. Mine's partly because that's what Arnie's done, but also I'm not a big fan of players that haven't been part of the process just going in and then being expected to start straight away. I think it should be guys that have played the last few games and have experience. So a left back, I have gone Bajic and King. I do really like Davidson. Davidson for King would be probably my switch. I think Bajic has to be there. At centre back, I've gone Sainsbury, Rolls, Deganek, Suter, with Bailey Wright as the cover if Suter isn't back in time. I really like the look of Thomas Deng. And, you know, I actually probably would have Thomas Deng as my Suter backup because he was quality in that second game, I thought. And then right back, I have gone Frank Karacic. And Nathaniel Atkinson, just Ryan Strain for me would be in the preliminary squad. The only I think he's great going forward. The only worry, I know when he was at Adelaide United, Carl Viet was never really happy with his defensive positioning. I think that would be a worry in the first two games. But I do think going forward, he's probably the best of the three. But yeah, mine is quite different and probably, unfortunately, going to be closer to being correct.
Let's move to the midfield now. Just move straight ahead. Pat, we'll go with you this time. Who have you got in your midfield for the Socceroos World Cup squad?
Look, I'll be completely honest. I've made a little bit of a mistake with my notes, and the section where I had my full squad, I have now lost completely.
The Bonds generation are back.
But look, I will do my best to think of about six or seven off the top of my head. So I think we've got the obvious ones. We've got Moy, Irvine, Krustic, McGree. I think probably we all agree that they would be there. And I think after that, it starts to get a bit debatable. Personally, and I know we didn't touch on it before, but I think we have to have Cameron Devlin there. I think he's that player that is just a bit of a terrier. He will run for probably 150 minutes if you tell him to, but he can muck in, do the dirty work. Maybe in games against the likes of maybe France and Denmark, where we are sitting back a bit more, I think maybe he could play that ball-winning role, or maybe even not so much shield with back four, but being a bit of a protection on the back four. So I'd love to see him get more than the 30 or so minutes he got in the second game against New Zealand. After that, I think, again, Tom's favourite, Connor Metcalf, I think, potentially he's done enough to deserve a spot. And like I said, we'd probably be taking more than the six midfielders there. Then after that, it's
Rogic.
It's an interesting one. I think if we're going to go with what Arnie's going to pick, you'd probably say that he would be there. I mean, he needs to get some game time for West Brom soon. I mean, he signed, what, 2-3 weeks ago. Obviously, they've had the disruptions with the stuff going on in the UK and the international break now, so he hasn't had the chance to play yet. But if he can get some minutes in the legs, you can pretty much guarantee that he would be there. And this is now where I might pass over to my wonderful colleagues.
I went with that exact same seven.
Same. Yeah. I had a couple of days ago, I had Metcalf above, I had genre above Metcalf, but off the back of that game, I've changed my mind. So
my work here is done. My work here is done.
No credit to Connor Metcalf. It's all Tom Williams.
The influence that man has over all of us is truly, truly frightening. And Pat, I should just say, if that was anyone else who made that little blunder there, I think they'd be off the pod, never to be heard from again. But because you've got so many funny sounding segments, I'll have that as your final warning, mate. And
if you had my name, you'd be gone.
Yeah. If your only rhyme was bloody mucus, you'd be out of here like that. But moving on, I think that's the midfield covered. So we'll go to Mr. Lucas Mucus Ronaldo. Who's up front for that's you? Who are your attackers?
Can we go back to the Rundle Moore Ronaldo? I prefer that. So for the attackers, I've got a set of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've got Martin Boyle, Matthew Leckie, Awa Mabil, Craig Goodwin, but I think people not from Adelaide are forgetting that he's been injured the entire offseason. I'm doubtful that he's going to start round one, so he really needs to get back to fitness because he's in a bit of danger. Then I've gone, the strikers have gone Mitch Duke, Adam Taggart, Jason Cummings, Garen Quoll, no Jamie McLaren. I think Arnie showed time and time again he doesn't rate him. And for me, I don't think you need all four of Duke, Taggart, Cummings and McLaren there. And Quoll's that little X factor off the bench. Tilio, I think, played himself off the plane against New Zealand. He was anonymous and then, of course, had that absolute sitter. But before that, I was actually disappointed because I was thinking that's a good talking point. I could talk about Tilio's poor performance and then he missed that sitter and I thought, now it looks like I'm just digging him out because he missed a great chance. but, yeah, the other one, there's another Smokey I'll leave, but I think we've got another segment coming up that I'll speak in later on. But, for me, that's the selection.
I'm loving this real structured format with just little dangles towards future segments here. It's very, very good. But, Tom... who's in your attack, Matt?
I basically went pretty much the same. 100% agree on Goodwin as well. I think people are sort of just forgetting everything that he's provided for the Socceroos. He scored that great penalty against Peru. He was really good in a couple of the other games that he came off the bench as well. I think the Vietnam game he scored and gave an assist. I think his left foot is a real danger in attacking areas, particularly his crossing. Like, if you've got Mitch Duke in the team, and I fully expect Mitch Duke to start at the World Cup, much to many people's dismay, but I think if you've got Craig Goodwin whipping in balls, particularly from set pieces, I think that's pretty dangerous. But, yeah, I've gone with my wide players, because these are probably the less controversial ones. I've gone Mabil, Boyle, Goodwin, Leckie, and Quoll as, like, a striker/wide player. And then I've gone with Duke, Taggart, and then my controversial one is sort of Nick D'Agostino. I think he's been injured in preseason as well. He was in the squad ahead of Jason Cummings before he was injured, and I think he was really good last A-League season. I think he's going to have a really good start to this season as well. If he's still injured or not performing in the A-League, I think Cummings fully deserves a spot, but I just thought I'd throw that one in there as a bit of a hashtag game changer.
Yeah, much will depend on that first month and a bit of the A-League, won't it? And we'll talk about the A-League in just a sec. But by sheer happenstance, just before Pat gets into a bit of Pat chat about a certain player, he might be talking about that certain player in his attacking list. Are you going to talk about the player, Pat? Who's in your attack? The Pat attack.
Well, once again, with my wonderful preparation, I can't really think of too many other players off the top of my head that my wonderful colleagues have discussed. I mean, but look, I mean, if we want to talk about people who I think will be there, I think I said Quoll definitely should be there. I think Duke will probably lead the line. I think I really want to see Taggart do well, and there were certain games way back when in the start of World Cup qualifier we could really see Arnold kind of create a role for him, dropping deeper, creating space for our wingers, but just recently hasn't really been working for him. He struggled against Brisbane, and I actually feel, once again, stealing the role of host from Harper, but do we think we need to work on getting the best out of whoever's playing out of number nine, or is it simply a personnel thing?
I think we've got a lot of strikers that are very similar and that don't suit the style of player that we have to play in a World Cup. I think McLaren's the best example of that. I thought it was going to be controversial that it didn't have McLaren in there, but looks like none of us have gone for him.
I don't think McLaren should be there. He's never done enough for the Socceroos. He just doesn't bring enough to the game, like in terms of making the team better.
Yeah. Also,
but if I just weigh in on that, sorry, one sec. If I just weigh in on that, and I've said this before with McLaren, like, he's not going to start for the Socceroos, right? And then if it's a case of who are you bringing off the bench, I'd much prefer to bring on D'Agostino or Cummings, who I know is going to like fight for everything, going to stretch the last line way more than what McLaren's going to do.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like, Quall's never going to start, but you want him in the squad to come on for the last 10 minutes. If you're saying who would rather start, it's obviously McLaren.
Oh, Pat, I'll just ask you one more thing about McLaren. What would he have to do, if anything, in his first six games in the A-League before the World Cup break? Like, what would he have to do to earn a spot on the plane? Like, if he scored 10 goals in the first six games, does that change your mind at all?
Well, I mean, he'll probably make the preliminary squad anyway, so I guess he'll get a chance in training to do that. But the fact is, he's been one of the top scorers in the league for his whole career whilst he's been in the league, and yet he still has never convinced for the Socceroos. And you just have to take that into account. There's just certain players that can do it on club stage or in a certain league, and then they can't transfer it over. I think it's just one of those things. I think McLaren's just not suited for either international football or just for the way that Arnold plays or the way that the Socceroos needs to play. He's never done it, and it's a shame because I think he's obviously a good player. No one's denying that he's a good player when you score the amount of goals that you have. He's obviously got something about him, but I just don't think he should be there. He just hasn't shown enough for me that he can be a difference maker when we need it most.
Now, Pat, I think it's time for your segment, mate. I hope you're very, very excited. I'll introduce it. I'll say the name for it. Then I'll play a glorious little sting that we've got, and then you can just go straight into it. So the name of this segment is Pat's Crack the Fat, and here's the stinger.
Oh, yeah.
I'm that around. Is... Well, look, I think Sunday's game on a glorious sunny afternoon in Auckland, it saw the culmination of a 3 to 4 year coming of age story where a certain long-haired striker from the Scottish Highlands who first came to world prominence for scoring a double against the mighty Liverpool. You know, I think that's where we first heard of the cum dog. But then Scotland didn't want him. You know, his country didn't want him. He couldn't play for the national team. All the clubs didn't want him. Then when all seemed lost, in the middle of the night, a text from Matt Simon himself just influenced him. It just encouraged him to come to the land down under, to the sauce bottle end of Gosford. And what, not even 8-9 months later, 10 A-League goals in his first half season, called up to the Socceroos. He even lost his British passport in Bondi about a week before. the man, the myth, the legend himself, the man who was off chops at the A-League Awards night.
Neil Simons.
At Eden.
Oh, sorry.
All right. A close second to Neil Simons himself, but at Eden Park on about the 80th minute, we saw the transformation of the cum dog into cum dingo. Jason Cummings scoring his first goal for his new homeland, Australia. That got my attention. That got me mightily excited.
Say the line.
I cracked a fat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I must say, I do really like the fact that everyone just assumes that all Scottish people are from the Highlands. I've just had a look. Jason Cummings is from the relatively big city of Edinburgh. But anyway, we'll move on. He's not bloody Mel Gibson, mate. Come on. We're going to move on to our team-by-team preview. But just before we do that, this is post-recording Harper here, by the way. Just before we do that, Tom was at the A-League season launch on Tuesday and got some pretty interesting comments out of a few of the big dogs over there. So first up, here is the APL big dog himself, Danny Townsend, on marketing. And then after that, on the upcoming 30-part A-League's docuseries.
Yeah, we don't have the luxury of budgets like the AFL and the NRL, so trying to compete with them when they're at the height of their season is not really that smart. So, you know, we sit back and we'll use these next 2 weeks to really drive engagement. And, you know, I think we've got our own channels that we've been firing up. Obviously, the Australia Cup this weekend, which will put a bit more focus on football. So, yeah, I think next 2 weeks are going to be big for us to lead into a big round one.
Do you know what platforms that A-League's All Access is going to be available on?
At the moment, it's going to be definitely on KeepUp and our web and our app, and also on our KeepUp YouTube channel. But we're also negotiating with commercial broadcasts to put it on a platform somewhere.
So this doesn't necessarily be a CBS, open up to all parties?
Look, our preference is that. But there's, you know, at the end of the day, it's a content series that anyone will be interested in. So yeah, we're talking to Mark. But obviously, yeah, we take it to our partners at Paramount first.
Back to the recording. And we'll start with Adelaide United because they're first in alphabetical order because
top of the league.
That's how it works. Lucas, you're the Adelaide United expert. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, I think for Adelaide, there hasn't been too much movement in terms of incomings. but I think on the face of it, a lot of people have been saying, it's good that we've kept the squad together. It's good to obviously get Goodwin back. That's great. My worry is I think Adelaide have stood still a bit. You have had the likes of Yenge, Toure, Dukeley. There's three attackers out. Halloran's the only one who's come in. Obviously, he only left midway through the season. I think there's a lack of depth up front. Van der Sarg and Warland are the other two players to come in. To me, there's a lot of reliance on players overperforming from last year. Ryan Kiddo played out of his skin last year. Was one of the best players, probably one of the best fullbacks in the league. Can he keep that up? Because he'd never reached that level before. And then Javi Lopez is another year over. I think the season depends on whether Zach Clough can be at the level that we didn't see last year. He came mid-season, came very underdone, but he does have a good reputation because I think outside of that, the midfield is a real worrying because you've got Isaias, who didn't have his best season last year. Juan Day doesn't work with him in the midfield, in my opinion. And then you've got Johnny Yule and Louis Dorigo, sort of the deputies now that Konstantopoulos has gone to the victory. So I don't know. I think we'll be mid-table, which is where Adelaide United always sort of tends to be as of late. But I can't see – I do think we've been a bit naive in terms of the – transfer situation, and also they need to hurry up and get the ownership situation sorted. The whispers started, I know the first we'd sort of reported on it was November last year. It's coming up to a year that it's been reported that Peligra are going to take over. They're still in the frame. It's just that they're not having that final thing to get over the line. So I think they need to sort of get that situation out of the way and then maybe they can start pressing on and hopefully maybe get one signing in, but it's probably too late now.
Pat, just a quick word from you, mate. Lucas was a bit critical. So for Adelaide, are you going to go into bat or are you cracking a fat?
I don't think I'll go quite as far as crack a fat. But, look, I'm not sure if we're going to go through where we think teams are going to finish, but I actually have Adelaide finishing fourth, which is where they finished last season. I think they've kept the bulk of their squad together. Obviously, keeping Goodwin permanently and Halloran coming back is obviously a huge plus. Look, I just think they ended the season really strongly last season. I think they finally got into a bit of a rhythm, a bit of a groove, and they stopped dropping points in really stupid games that they shouldn't have. I also think they've got some really exciting young talent, Alexander Popovich, Bernardo Oliveira, and obviously Nestroy Irinkunda.
Gauchi as well.
And Gauchi, yeah, of course, can't miss him. Yeah, just from a neutral point of view, I'm really excited to see how these youngsters perform. I mean, Adelaide, they've produced so much talent. You know, South Australia's a hotbed of footballing talent. I'm really excited to see with more game time this season how those young players go. But I do agree with Lucas, just looking over the squad. I'm no Adelaide United expert, but I did look at their midfield and it looks light, I think. Even as it is, it's light. I think one or two injuries, that's what could make them maybe not finish fourth. But I think I'd be fairly optimistic if I was an Adelaide fan. It's going to be fairly solid and successful season.
I've got Adelaide sixth. The only thing, though, I think the front line for me is the best in the league, Halloran, Ibasuki and Goodwin. Goodwin's the best player in the competition. Halloran is excellent and vastly underrated, and Ibasuki was a great signing. Come at me.
I'm sitting back and just going to let this happen.
Who's better? Who's better? Melbourne City's maybe.
Nani, D'Agostino.
Nani's not proven. Can he do it on a freezing, on a hot day in Perth? I don't know. Who knows?
At Macedonia Park.
can he do it at Macedonia Park? We don't know. Okay, it's a big call. One of the best front lines in the league, but the midfield's weak, and I think with a better midfield, I think this team wins the league. I honestly do. And I think there's a big togetherness about the group. Adelaide United finished fourth last year and it looked very good. I think with a better midfield, Adelaide United could win the league. But the lack of
That's getting clipped up, Harper. Remember this, to clip this up. That's going on the social.
But they didn't do it. So that's why I've put them sixth. So I think that's the difference. That midfield is unfortunately not at that level. And if Kiddo and Lopez don't perform at the level they did last year, then I think might not be as easy going.
Let's move to Brisbane and we'll move to Tom Williams. Well, tell us what you think of them. Charlie Austin obviously is the kind of standout here, the big name signing, second biggest name signing in the league, you say, this season. Gets a lot of attention on Twitter. Is he going to get as much attention for his performances on the park?
I certainly hope so. I think Brisbane have a lot of potential to be a really good team, but I'm a bit worried that a lot of their off-field issues will sort of converge onto their on-the-pitch performances. I think there's a lot of questions about their ownership. There's questions about whether moving into a 52,000-seat stadium after barely getting crowds at a much smaller stadium last season is a good idea. There's obviously like the Corey Brown saga, which is still ongoing. So there's a lot of problems at that club. And even you look at some of the signings they've made, I don't think they're 100% convincing. There's people on Twitter saying that Brisbane are signing players off YouTube highlight reels. It's a really curious situation with that club, and I just don't think a lot is going right for them at the moment. So I think particularly in midfield, Akbari and Jay O'Shea is a very good midfield pairing. I think they obviously have Charlie Austin up top now, who should hypothetically get some of the goals that they didn't get last season because Lescano was playing up top, and that guy that's now playing in the fourth tier in Japan, completely forgot his name, I think Rio Wada.
Yeah.
don't think Wada will be investigating him for his performances in the A-League last season. Let's just say that.
Very good.
I like that.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for that team to be good, but I don't know. It's a perplexing one for me. I don't really see it at this stage.
I agree that they're not in a good spot, but I think I've been impressed with how they've looked in the Australia Cup. And the thing, sometimes when you have off-field issues, I think sometimes if you've got a young group, it can galvanise them a bit. Sometimes, especially we've seen that in the A-League in the past, where they sort of come together as almost like they sort of group together in terms of fighting up against the establishment. I think with Charlie Austin there, his attitude in preseason has been excellent. Saw in the Australia Cup game when they won on penalties, and he's there celebrating everything compare that to Ben Halloran when he puts his penalty against Adelaide City on the same night, goes and shakes hands with the goalkeeper. I think that he's got a winner's attitude, and I think with a young team, could actually serve Brisbane pretty well. I don't think they're going to make the sixth. I've got them in eighth, which is an improvement on last year, and I do think a lot of the bottom half teams have improved a lot, so wouldn't be the worst season for them. But I just think with their young team, they might sort of band together and they might go on a run at times where they look like they can do something, but ultimately they just don't have the cattle that some other sides do.
Just before we move on from Brisbane, here's Charlie Austin talking to Tom, former English non-league striker, of course. Charlie Austin on advice for young up-and-coming A-League players down here in Australia.
Listen, it's hard work. Like you say, there's only 12 teams, but they've got to continue to strive to be better, I guess. And when the opportunity comes, you've got to take it. Listen, I signed for Swindon six weeks into my... After signing, I was given a first-team opportunity and I scored on my debut and never looked back and kind of grabbed the opportunity and went forward. I think the problem you have here, because there's such a short... Not a short season, but 12 teams, it's only a small field to pick from. And the opportunities don't come, it's like you say, and then the teams get downhearted and don't think it's going to happen to them. But when the opportunity comes, they're not ready. You've got to be ready all the time. And like I say, when the opportunity comes, they've got to seize it.
No, I think that's Brisbane just about covered. So it's time for another segment. Fire up. This is Tom. This is your segment. So again, I'll introduce it. I'll play the little stinger and then you just can let rip. So this segment is called Tom's Bomb.
Dennis Genro is just a bit shit. That's my bomb for this week. Boom. The explosions have already come out. Plays 40 minutes in 10 weeks in Ligue 1. Yeah. Mate, I think I spent – actually, no, I won't say what I was going to say there. That's fine. But yeah, I thought Dennis Genro's performance against New Zealand was pretty garbage. There's been a lot of people, particularly on Twitter, that have been calling for him to be selected in the starting 11 for months now. A lot of people saying in that number six role, because we need more of a someone who's going to run a lot, who's going to be more of a technical presence there, so, sort of similar to Aaron Moy. And I just think that Genro isn't that player. He's a player that does a lot of running and can intercept the ball high up the pitch, but he's not someone that's comfortable receiving the ball deep and playing the ball forwards like what Aaron Moy can do. So I think with Genro, it's more of a misconception around the player that he is. He's not a number six. He's a player that's good higher up the pitch, but the problem then is he can't shoot. So it's like if you're going to play him as a number 10, like – he's got great touches, great intricate passing ability, but he literally can't shoot. So it's really hard to find a position for him in this Socceroos team. I said before that I wouldn't have him in my World Cup squad. I've said this quite a while about Genro. I think he's a dysfunctional player at the base of midfield. We saw at the Olympics he was playing next to Connor Metcalf, except Metcalf had the license to go forward. And in most of those games, particularly the game against Egypt, the midfield didn't really function. Genro was obviously subbed off at halftime against Egypt as well. So I've just not been convinced very much with his performances in the national teams. And then if you look last season, if you go casting back to his phenomenal season at Toulouse, promoted from Ligue 2, right? Well, the reason he was playing games was because their captain was injured for half the season. Like, he didn't get into the team for pretty much most of the season as soon as Brett Desjardins came back into the team. He was coming off games off the bench, which is what he's doing now, except in Ligue 1, they've changed formation because they're one of the worst teams in the league. They're playing five at the back. They're playing two in midfield. So now Desjardins is sitting on the bench. Desjardins is the guy getting subbed on, and Genro is just sitting on the bench not getting any minutes. So I think people should have tempered their expectations about Genro. I don't think he's the player that people think he is, and I don't think he should be going to the World Cup.
Yeah. Now, I hope listeners get used to chat about people like Brett Desjardins, because it could be a regular thing whenever Tom Williams is on the show. And that's just about it for that segment. So that was Tom's bomb. Caroline Wilson and Footy Classified, watch out. Let's move to some more team-by-team previews. Pat Prosciutto, the Central Coast Mariners, obviously you know every single thing about New South Wales football, so tell us every single thing you know about the Central Coast Mariners.
Oh, don't oversell me too much, but look, I think they're a team that everyone wrote off last season after they lost a host of players, and yet they pretty much were almost as good, if not better. I mean, Nick Montgomery did an absolutely brilliant job with that side to get them into fifth. They played some wonderful, wonderful football. The question is, can they do it again? Because there's been another overhaul. Mark Birigidi's gone, Rolls is gone, Marco Urania gone, which I think is absolutely massive. And obviously, Garang Cole, the man that is on everyone's lips at the moment, he could be gone in January as well. So I think Nick Montgomery once again is going to have to find that magic formula to get those Coasties punching above their weight again. Honestly, for me, I think last season I predicted them to come about 11th or 10th or something. I think I'm a bit wiser now. I don't think they'll be that bad, but I think maybe it could be, the finals could be a stretch too far, just because I think Urania, as Tom might touch on, I think Urania, he completely changed that team. He's one of the most intelligent A-League players I've ever seen. His movement is second to none. He's also got the technique and the poise to match that. And it's interesting to see how, I think Jason, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jason Cummings, especially if slash when Garang Cole leaves. I think Jason Cummings to reproduce that form that he showed when he first came into the league. They've signed a few exciting youngsters though. I think Nectar Triantis is probably not a name that a lot of people know, but through my work covering the Wanderers Academy, he was an absolutely wonderful centre-back. I think he really stood out. He's moved to the Mariners. I'm pretty sure he's got a proper first-team contract there. I think he's a big, big lad. He's able to play it out from the back. He's assertive, and he can also get on the end of corners. I think he's really one to watch. I think over the next couple of years, if he can get some game time, he could be someone that we'll be talking a lot more about.
Yeah, I think right off the Mariners at your peril is sort of the thing every season. Every year they lose a whole team. Every year they bring in a bunch of guys, for some from the academy, some from South America we've never heard of, and they're always brilliant. I think that they might have the best scouting in the entire competition, in that when they get guys, they don't have a budget like, they probably have one of the smallest budgets in the league, well, they do, but they still go out and go to places like South America, go to places like Portugal and find these guys. They actually scout players, which is something a lot of clubs with their budget don't do. I'm very excited to see what Marco Tullio does. Of course, great name. And if there's anything like the I version, I'm sure he'll be brilliant. And then
will he be able to score a goal from 5 yards out though? That's the question.
Well, I was hammering him before, so well, I think they just have this knack of, and Paul Yongo and all the foreigners they tend to bring in tend to be around that 24, 25 age. Sam Silvera, I'm interested to see how he comes back. I think that's a fairly like for like replacement once Qual is out of there. I just hope Qual starts before, I presume it'll probably be January that he moves on. I just hope he starts for the whole season and we can see what he's like when he gets 90 minutes. For me, I've got them in seventh, just missing out on the finals. But to be honest, with the players they've lost, if they were to go and finish rock bottom, you wouldn't be surprised. But it's only the faith. They're almost like, it's probably not the best of the last example because Leicester are last at the moment. But in previous years, Leicester have always done that thing where everyone goes, oh, they've lost too many players. Southampton have done it in the past as well. They've lost too many players. And then they find these guys, diamonds in the rough, from nowhere. So for me, I'm going Mariners to finish just outside the six.
Yeah, I think one player I forgot to mention, but Danny Vukovic replacing Mark Birigidi, I think that is super important. Because I think we see, you know, I think a few clubs last season had keepers that struggled to perform and it cost them dearly. But I think, you know, Mark Birigidi is one of the most important players for Central Coast, and they've replaced him with a similar caliber player. Obviously, Vukovic is getting on, even for a keeper, he's starting to get on a bit now, but I think he will do a very good job. And I think he's probably one of the reasons why I haven't picked them to finish lower. I've got them about 7th or 8th, just because, again, I think they've lost just a few too many players this time and in key positions, you know, so like centre-back and striker and the like. But I think Vukovic will be really, really important to them if they're going to maybe get in that 5th or 6th spot again.
And I know we spoke about him before, but here is Jason Cummings with Tom at the A-League season launch. And Tom was asking the Scottish-born canine about why he and the Aussie football fans seem to have struck up such a good relationship with each other.
You know what, I'd say we're Australians and Scottish people, they're quite similar. You know, they've got the same type of banter, you know, like the same way you can... We Australians, you can just hammer them all day, like slag them, banter them, and they love it. You know what I mean? They just love, they love the banter, and it's the same in Scotland. So I think that's, I think that's really similar. What else? I'd say that I'm pretty chilled as a person as well, and everyone, especially on the coast, mate. Everyone on the coast is just chilled, man. They're too lazy to put on fucking socks, socks and trainers. They just go to the shop. They go to Coles in bare feet. Go to the shops bare feet,
different,
not a problem.
Different
breed, so they're just chilled, you know what I mean? Go down to the beach, just walk about bare feet, you know what I mean? It's just, everyone's just enjoying life there. It's good.
Tom Williams, you're a huge fan of MacArthur, or you were last season at least. Are you as huge a fan this season?
What I will say is that I would like to say an ode to MacArthur FC and all of the players at MacArthur FC, particularly Ulysses Davila, who had to put up with a year under the shackles of my good friend, Ante Milicic, who is gone now. And voila, we're seeing the real Ulysses Davila once again, and we're seeing MacArthur actually look pretty good in preseason. They've made it to an Australian Cup final. Dare I say, I think they'll probably win that game. And that's without Craig Noon really even playing too often. So I think MacArthur have like a pretty decent team, particularly in attack. If you look at the weapons, like they've got a vibes attack, if we're being honest. Like all of the players can produce individual quality, like Arzani, Davila, Danny Da Silva, Al-Hassan Toure, Craig Noon, like these are all good players. Dare I say, challenging Adelaide United for the title of best attack in the league.
How dare you?
But
write us off. Do it again and watch us finish above everyone. Wanderers haven't made the final since I was about 14 years old, I reckon. But, you know, that's right. Write Adelaide off.
I think in a similar vein to Adelaide, though, MacArthur's big issue is in midfield. We saw them last season deploy like Tommy Orr and Mbambwa as like a midfield duo, and also like Ushkok played in there, Jordan Much played in there, and he was absolutely atrocious. So that's still a big problem area. They've signed Backus, who's a good player, but I think he's just tidy. He's not a player who's going to win you games from that position. And then defensively, I don't rate their fullbacks at all. I think it's probably going to be McGing or Miller and Vujica. And then their centre-backs are like solid, like Shushanyar and Ushkok with Curto in goal or Schumann. But yeah, all round, I think their team's not the greatest, but their attack is very good. I think they'll be an exciting team to watch.
I think they're one of the most intriguing teams just purely because of their manager, Dwight York. It's his first ever management job, and I think obviously we got the All-Stars game. Whether that shows really how good he is or not, I don't think so, but I just think it's gonna be really interesting to see if he's gonna sink or swim. I mean, you've obviously looked, their Australia Cup run to the final, you've got to commend them for that. It's, you'd argue, a soft one. I think all but one of the games in their entire run has been against semi-pro sides, but credit to them, they've got the job done. And I think one thing that's really big, and I know one of these, I might not talk about too much of one of the players. I think Lucas might want to touch on him in a moment, but I think Alhassan Toure, he struggled a bit. He may have struggled with injuries at Adelaide United. I may be wrong there, but definitely he didn't really shine too much for the Bulls last season. He was a bit in and out of the team. I think he was even playing a little bit for their youth side in first grade in the end, but I think he's had a really positive start in this Australia Cup run. He's got a few goals, and I think if he can stay fit, he's obviously an absolute weapon, one of the bright, another bright young striker from Adelaide United. There's a few of those, but I think it'd be great to see Alhassan Toure kind of maybe break free, kind of break out a little bit after a slow start to life at MacArthur. I think potentially it's going to be interesting to see if York is going to be a manager that will be able to unlock that talent. Obviously, you know, as Tom alluded to, they had a very different style manager in Milicic, so it's interesting if they're going to go the complete 180. But, I think MacArthur, very interesting just for that manager aspect, I think.
And, of course, as you alluded to, Pat, MacArthur are in the Australia Cup final on Saturday night at 7:45 Sydney time against the first ever NPL side to make the Australia / FFA Cup final, Sydney United. Lucas, we'll spend a couple minutes on this game, I think, because it is a cup final. Maybe as few fans as these two teams have that listen to this podcast, it is worth touching on for sure. So, Lucas, MacArthur versus Sydney United, who's going to win and why?
I think MacArthur will do it. I'd love Sydney United to do it. It would be a great story. It's amazing they've got this far, and they haven't done it just beating. It's not like in the early days where the cup draw was a bit rigged. They've done it beating A-League sides, which is the most impressive part. And I loved the scenes in the semi-finals. Alhassan Toure has won a Mark Viduka medal, the best on ground, before when he was at Leeds United. And I think he's, like Pat mentioned, he's been so good in this competition so far. So I think MacArthur will do it. I'm very impressed by them. I actually have them finishing second, just quietly. But this weekend, I think they'll get their first piece of silverware ever. I can see Tom Williams saying, yeah, that high, fight me. I think it'll be a chance for Sydney United to show what they're about in terms of they're playing really the club that represents the most against them in the entire competition, because MacArthur got in based on the amount of money they had and don't have anyone rocking up to their games. If you could write a script for this game, it's MacArthur versus Sydney United. So should be a very exciting encounter. I know there's a Croatian football festival on in Sydney this weekend, so it should be a massive crowd. But I do think MacArthur will get over the line.
Tom, MacArthur, they played three NPL sides in the their run to the final, and they pretty much dismantled all of them. 6-0 against Magpies Crusaders, 4-0 against the Modbury Jets, and then, of course, 5-2 against the mighty Oakley Cannons, which you were at. You were fortunate enough to be at live. Are they going to dismantle Sydney United, MacArthur, on Saturday night?
I'm not sure if they'll dismantle them. I think they'll win comfortably, though. I don't think Sydney United will have a chance against just like the attacking quality that MacArthur have. I've been critical of players like Arzani in the past, but I think against NPL opposition, like, you can clearly see the divide in quality there, particularly Davila and Arzani, who are just superb technicians. So I think it'll be a comfortable win for MacArthur, and I think it's really important that they do win because they're trying to build this fan base out in the southwest of Sydney, and I think in a similar vein to Western United last season with their championship, they need something tangible where they can say to their fan base, here, look, we've got this cup. Can you get around this? Like, especially now that they don't have Milicic at the club, they can actually say, like, look, we're playing like reasonably good football, right? And they can say, look, cup here, we're playing good football on the pitch. We've got some of the best players in the league, and we've got watchable players like Davila and Arzani. Just come down.
I think it's time for the our third panelist segment. So this segment is where Mr. Lucas Ronaldo sits someone in the footballing world down in his therapist armchair and gives them a few words of wisdom. a bit of a helping hand. He extends it out, and the segment is called LucasAid.
Why was my stinger so shit?
Yeah, I was really struggling. Really struggling to get a name and really struggling to get a stinger. So I hope you're not really struggling to get some content for your segment, mate. What have you got?
Harper, I've got a patient in my room, and it's Daniel Azani, because I'd like to say, Daniel Azani, you've still got a chance. It doesn't matter. You've had a horrible couple of years. But this Australia Cup run that is on, and the fact that Marco Tilio can't hit the target to save his life, and the fact that Craig Goodwin's coming back from injury, Daniel Azani is a chance of making this World Cup squad. And I think he'll make the – as long as he has a good couple of first games in the A-League, I think he'll make that extended squad. And Arnie loves him. So I think we're in the boat where all he needs is a goal or a couple of assists or to just look lively, because he is one of those players that if you want to look at the bench, you want to see Azani and Cole there. So I just think – even though he went to a team that no one had ever heard of in Belgium and didn't get a game, even though he played about 12 seconds at Celtic and then, you know, got injured for the entire year, it doesn't matter, because now he's in a position where a couple of good games and he's in another World Cup squad, which really a player of his quality deserves to be. So Daniel Azani, it'll be all right. A couple of good games, you're off to Qatar.
Daniel, hope you're tuning into today's edition of LucasAid.
I'm sure he does. He's a regular listener.
That's the artist. Absolutely beautiful stuff. If LucasAid want to sponsor us and have their own little ad in there, feel free. Get in touch, guys. It's time to move on to our last two teams of this episode's preview. So we'll go to Melbourne City. Tom, they've lost your boy, Connor Metcalf. How are they going to cope?
Well, I think the jury's still out on that. I think I covered them a lot last season, and so I watched a lot of their games, and they just became a bit stale towards the end of the season. I'm not sure if anyone else felt like that, but especially in the grand final as well, when Western United got the early goal, you just felt like City were never going to come back. Like, it genuinely just felt like all the stuff that Kiznorbo was doing, there was no real like plan B. I know it's a massive cliche, but the way that they were playing was just so fragmented. It was really like going about trying to do the same things over and over again and hoping that it would work, getting the ball out wide to Naboot, trying to get Tilio on the ball inside whenever they can. It just wasn't really working that well. So I think the foreigners are going to play a big part this season. We don't know how any of them are going to perform, but Valon Berisha, for example, looks like he's going to be quite good. He's got quite a good CV. He was quite good in Europe for a while. He's got a big shoes to fill in terms of his surname, because we all know what Bessart did in this league. But I'm sure he'll be wanting to impress the City fans more than his namesake ever did. And then they've got Van de Ven as well, who looks like he's probably more of a direct replacement for Metcalf. But then you look at their midfield, there's a lot of players there, and I'm not sure how they're going to like fit all these players in, especially when you look at Aidan O'Neill coming back from injury and Berongay is probably like undroppable after last season. So I'm interested to see how Kiznorbo is going to deal with that. And then you've got Tilio to try and work into the team instead of one of the front three. And we've seen a lot of people talk about that. So I'm intrigued to see how they go. They've been really successful over the past couple of years, and they've still got a really good team, but I'm not really sure whether they'll be right at the top of the table.
Lucas, they've got a couple big games early. First, the grand final rematch on the Friday night, and then Melbourne Derby a couple of weeks later. So if they don't get off to the greatest start, how likely is Patrick Kiznorbo to keep his job if they don't perform in the first few games and then over the course of the season?
I think he's got plenty of credit in the bank from what he's done with that club. I think, as Tom touched on, it's just a matter of if they get a bit of the case of the Sydneys, where they've just been too good for too long and they have a few players drop off. For me, the worry is the goalkeeper. I have no idea why they didn't go after Danny Vukovic. They could have blown Mariners out of the water financially. I know Vukovic has been in from that area before, so maybe he wanted to go back to the Mariners. But for me, that would have been a completely obvious signing. But Melbourne City are playing in a different league to the rest of the competition because they have the opportunity to go out there and get Valen Berisha, get Richard van der Ven. Players have pedigree rather than doing what Central Coast Mariners do, where they're going to every corner of the globe and getting guys who maybe want a different life experience. So it's just a matter of trying to keep the guys that are still there motivated. I do think they'll still be up there. I've got them in third. But, yeah, it's just the goalkeeper and maybe a bit of the defence that worries me slightly.
Move on to their City rivals and we'll move on to Pat Bruschetto. Melbourne Victory, they've absolutely raided Adelaide United. Well, can you call two players a raid? I'm not sure, but they've got two players from Adelaide United. How are those two players going to go and how's Melbourne Victory going to go?
I think Melbourne Victory generally, I have very high expectations of them. For me, I think they're going to be first. I think they're going to overtake their city rivals, Melbourne City. Look, I think the fact is that Popovic took them from a complete basket case to second on the ladder. And look, they'll be disappointed with a few of their games in the regular season. Probably they dropped a few points they shouldn't have. And most obviously, they'll be disappointed with their capitulation, the preliminary final. But I mean, Popovic has laid that foundation. He's brought in Nani, who I think will be absolutely phenomenal. Unlike Daniel Starr, he's actually played some friendly games and he's actually showed some promise in those friendly games. But more importantly, I think Paul Izzo is a massive signing for them because keeper was a huge, huge issue for them last season. I think our good friend Tom Williams will tell us, we'll completely agree with that one. But no, I think Paul Izzo is huge. Ryan Marchand, if he can have a full season, he missed a lot of the season with injury and they are just a much better team with him in the midfield. I think the Victory, I think there could be really good times again for the Melbourne Victory. Can Popovic break his grand final curse? Who knows? Grand finals are obviously a bit crazy, but no, I think the Victory will do very well this season.
Final bit on Victory and final clip, actually, from the A-League season launch. Tom Williams with Nani.
And you're coming with a big reputation. A lot of people are very excited to see you. Does that sort of impact how you might play on the pitch? Do you carry that status with you or are you just focusing on your game itself?
No, actually, I will focus. Like I said, that's not a big, not the most important for me to perform and be the best player. I have a lot of experience in all my career. I think what I had to show, I showed before. The most important here is what I can deliver for this league, for this club, for the players, for the fans, and then that needs a lot of hard work. So I will try. Put it all together and see at the end what we will see.
Now, that's Melbourne Victory done. That's the first six teams done. So that is the preview for the A-League season done for this episode. But we've got one final segment. There's no stinger for this one, unfortunately. It's called Between the Lines. And it's sort of like your British improv comedy type shows you see on TV. Won't name them because no free ads, of course, on this show. But I'm going to give you an Australian football-related prompt. Yeah, Lucozade is definitely not any kind of brand. We just made that because it sounds a bit like Lucas. I'm going to give you an Australian football prompt. And you guys are going to hit me and our listeners, our lovely, lovely listeners, with your response to that prompt. So I'm sure everyone will get it once we get started. So I'll just start with the first one. Of course, Chris Hiddink has been spending a bit of time with the Socceroos and Graham Arnold over this international break. So your first prompt, unlikely people to join Arnie in the dugout in Qatar.
Lucas. As you know, I'm Graham Arnold, boys, and alongside me here is Adam Peacock. And Adam, where the fuck is my apology?
that was so good, just about unbeatable, I reckon. So we'll move straight on to the next one. Things Dwight York didn't say in his first training session with MacArthur.
Tom. God, I wish Ante Milicic was here.
Lucas. All right, lads, we're going to train like I did in my days in the Premier League. So, Bozza, bring in the strippers.
Pat. Oh, jeez, God, huge on this one. Pat, go for it.
All right, lads, so in this training game, we're going to have Craig Noone at centre-back.
Very nice. We'll move on to our third. Boys, what are some A-League slogans that didn't quite make the cut?
Pat. The A-League men's 2022-2023 season, now with more ads than ever.
Lucas. Isuzu, you can go your own way. Just ask Milos Ninkovic.
And we're talking about the Australia Cup before, of course, this Saturday. So what won't we hear on Australia Cup final day? What you won't hear on Australia Cup final day, please, boys?
Pat. Oh, it's really great to see Sydney United, a proud Serbian team, in the final today.
Lucas. So we've got a special guest to do the Australia Cup speech. So Bruno Fonaroli, coming up.
Final one, boys. It's been an absolute pleasure doing this podcast, but final one of Between the Lines for this week. Headlines we don't want to see this A-League season.
Lucas. And your 2023 A-League champions, Melbourne Victory.
We love a bit of impartiality here at the Golden Generation. Anyone else?
Tom. Paramount Plus announces eternal non-existence of a rewind button.
Pat. Breaking news. MacArthur charge $1,000 for general admission tickets.
I think seeing MacArthur in any news is going to be a bit ambitious, to be honest. But look, boys, that was very, very fun. Thank you very much for coming on. I hope all the listeners enjoyed it. Tom, thank you for coming on this week. I'm sure we'll see you again very soon, probably next week. Thanks for coming on, mate. Hope you enjoyed it.
No worries. Always a pleasure. Great to kick off this fantastic podcast.
Always a pleasure. Episode one. That's how we like it. Lucas, thank you as well.
Thanks, mate. You'll probably only hear about 3 minutes of me in this podcast after all my bits get censored. thanks for having me on.
And finally, Pat, it was a pleasure to chat. I'll leave it at that. So,
thanks very much, Harper. Good to be back.
And thank you very, very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back on Monday, hopefully, next week to do some more A-League previews and have some more segments, which you may or may not find very funny. But we all have a laugh at it ourselves for it because we think we're top shit here at the Golden Generation. Thanks for tuning in and see you next week.